Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we are talking about a very important topic, the San Diego proposal to raise the minimum wage. And I'm very pleased to have two special guests with us. The first is Robert Nothoff, who is the Research and Policy Analyst for the Center on Policy Initiatives. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Secondly, we have Mark Arabo, President and CEO of the Neighborhood Market Association. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Now, we also have one of our wonderful interns today, Jaden Jimenez. And Jaden has been doing some stories for us and research on the minimum wage. Jaden, can we start today by having you bring us up to speed on the latest changes in the City Council as of Monday of this week?
On Monday, Todd Gloria had redacted his previous proposal for a $13.09 minimum wage raise and is now supporting a $11.50 minimum wage raise. And this will not exempt any businesses, and it will be a phase-in period the same as the previous one. So over 3 years, it will gradually raise, and afterwards, in 2019, the minimum wage will raise according to inflation.
Okay, very good. Now, how does that compare to the state minimum wage that is also taking place? Robert, perhaps you can address that question for us.
Sure thing. So the state minimum wage is set to increase to $9 an hour on July 1st of this year. And then we will wait another 18 months and it'll increase to $10 an hour beginning on January 1st of 2016. And so while we obviously at the Center on Policy Initiatives agree that that's a great step forward, when you take a look at the state minimum wage and you compare that to a high-cost city like San Diego, well, you know, the $10 an hour is great if you're living in the city of Stockton. However, we understand that here in San Diego, costs are much higher. And if we want to make sure that working folks who are working a full-time job are able to stay out of poverty and work and make sure that we are living up to the promise that we do say that if you work full-time, you will not be stuck in poverty, then we need to make sure that we have a local increase that's actually in line with what it actually costs to live here in San Diego. And that's where the original $13.09 figure came from some research that CPI did in conjunction with the Leach Tag Foundation. And, we also want to make sure that we are addressing the issue of earned sick days as well, because we have found that 44% of San Diego's private workforce actually lacks a single day of earned sick leave. So at the end of the day, this is really about making sure that anybody who works full-time is not living in poverty. And anybody who finds themselves sick or has to take care of a sick loved one is not punished between making the choice between staying home and taking care of themselves or that sick loved one and losing a day's pay, which could be the difference in paying a bill or rent at the end of the month.
So does the proposal, the revised version, address the sick pay issue?
Yes, it does. So it's still at 5 days. So we came in, the original proposal that Council President Gloria proposed included 5 days of earned sick leave. And again, it's earned. It's not necessarily something that's handed out, but it accumulates 1 hour for every 30 hours worked. And that is still, it's still set at five days as of yesterday's.
Now, Mark, I know that the Neighborhood Market Association had concerns about the minimum wage proposal, particularly as it was originally proposed. I wonder if you can share with our listeners the reasons why you were concerned about it, and then to what degree does the revised proposal resolve or address your concerns?
Sure. So originally, first I want to say that I want to thank Council President Todd Gloria for bringing up this issue, because we at the Neighborhood Market Association, on behalf of our 2,400 small businesses in California, agree that nobody working full-time should ever live in poverty. And it's a multifaceted problem, and it's not a quick fix. It's not just increasing the wage. Previously, his $13.09, we were concerned about it. We were joined with the California Restaurant Association, the Hotel Motel Association, the San Diego Chamber of Commerce. It was a big, broad coalition. What we were asking is, we felt that it was too much too soon, not balanced. And when you increase labor costs by 64%, at least on behalf of the small business community, they don't have vaults of cash. We don't. We work on razor-thin margins. We're barely making it. Sure, folks like Walmart and Target, they could pay a little bit more. They should pay more. But small mom and pops that work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, they're barely making it. So the new proposal he has, we were glad and we appreciate Todd Gloria recognizing that 13 was too steep. And we recognize that and thankful that he said, let's try to balance it. So what we're asking now is, the city of San Diego has a living wage ordinance. And in the living wage ordinance, it has a small business exemption for 12 employees or less. And we're at a point right now where the Neighborhood Market Association is 90% there. We
90% towards being able to support this proposal.
Because we don't want any San Diegan or any family to ever have to choose between showing up to work when you're sick or paying the electricity bill at the end of the month.
So you support the five sick days?
The sick days, we actually do support it.
And would you support the 5 sick days for everybody without exemptions on that one?
The sick days, we do surveys, but on the cuff, I would say we have broad support of sick days. The issue is with the raise is this, that we have 2,400 small businesses we represent. In San Diego, it's 852 in San Diego County. Majority of them are Chaldean. In San Diego alone, 30% of our stores are large markets. Mm-hmm. Markets like Kiehl's, like Stumps, like Foodlands. Those folks, they're paying more than minimum wage and they're happy that the $11.50. The other 70% of our members are small markets. Now, the small markets, around 30% of those are 15 employees or more. They're medium-sized markets. And then the rest, around 50%, or so are small grocery stores, small convenience stores, small gas stations. Out of those amounts, around half of those already pay above minimum wage. So it leaves with 20% left. 20% left of our members want to pay more than minimum wage, want to pay more, but simply cannot afford to do so. And what we're saying is we want to make sure that government doesn't put small business out of business. There's a way to do it. And people should not treat a Walmart the same as they treat a mom and pop.
Yeah, and we should note that some of these mom and pops, too, are immigrant-owned, refugee-owned. These are people who faced their own set of struggles in life. Now, I'd like to go back to you, Robert, and ask you if you would like to respond to the points that were raised by Mark.
Absolutely. So, again, I really appreciate Mark raising some of these issues. I think that they definitely need to be vetted for the public because I think that there is a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of fear when people talk about raising the minimum wage and what that could really do to small business. However, you know, I'd like to really take us beyond just what could theoretically happen and talk about what's actually happened with empirical evidence when actual local cities here in the state of California under the same regulations have actually passed a minimum wage increase. I'll use the example of San Jose, who's the most recent to do so. They increased theirs by 25%, and they did it in 90 days. So they didn't wait this out over a year or two or three.
It was a steep increase fast.
Immediately. And there were a number of folks who were opposed to this. For example, a gentleman by the name of Scott Neese, who's the executive director of the San Jose Downtown Association, ademantly opposed to this. 1 year later, he said, actually, that wasn't a big deal at all. We absorbed that, no problem. But who it was a huge deal for were the actual people who got that increase in pay. An additional $2 a year is approximately an additional $5,000 that goes into folks.
I think you mean $2.
$2 an hour, right, is an additional $5,000 in the pockets of folks who desperately need it and who turn around and actually participate in the economy. It allows them to actually be members of this. And when low-wage workers get an increase in pay, they spend it on bare necessities, for instance, clothing and at grocery stores like the ones that Mr. Arbo represents. And the reason, you know, in terms of like price increases, I called Lunardi's Market up in San Jose today and asked them how much a carton of a dozen eggs costs after they did this increase, you know, 18 months later. And it was at $2.49. So we literally look at pennies on the dollar.
What was it before?
It was approximately the same as that. You know, they wouldn't give me the definitions, but it didn't skyrocket to $3, $4, $5, as we've heard in the past here. And we see that, you know, the highest price increases that we see are in the restaurant industry, where we've seen like a you know, San Francisco did a 26% increase. They saw an increase of 3% in terms of like wages or price increases there 10 years later. And San Jose has, you know, did a 25% increase. And the highest, the most impacted industry was the restaurant industry. And they had a 1.75% increase. So literally pennies on the dollar. Yet you have a 25% increase in wages for folks who actually need it. And the reason, the last point I'd like to make real quickly in responding is, a part of this is in San Jose, it injected an additional $100 million into their economy. And again, when that starts circulating, it does well for businesses. People can now spend and participate in the economy. It raises the consumer floor, which then begins to create jobs. And it's a tide that lifts all boats. And businesses are able to really absorb this because of the fact that retention goes up, people stay longer, productivity increases. And that really is like the bulk of the lion's share of what happens, of where the costs are absorbed. And that's based, again, on empirical evidence from 10 years of San Francisco and the last 18 months in San Jose.
Mark, I would like to hear what your response is to that. To what degree do you believe that increased spending by consumers who have more money in their pockets would help at least partially offset the increased labor costs for the small mom-and-pop businesses locally?
Sure. Well, you know, I would say that, and I would ask him, would you compare a Walmart the same as a small business? Because there's two different things. When people collect data, they collect data through IRI, and usually IRI is through scan systems. Scan systems are large grocery stores. We're talking about the small mom-and-pop grocery markets, small mom-and-pop gas station. There's two ways. If you go to a small business owner that's barely making it, which a lot of them are struggling right now, and say we're increasing costs by 44% to do business, they either have to cut their expenses by 44% or raise prices by 44%. So a lot of them, if they didn't raise their prices, they probably cut their salaries. They had to cut employees. They had to have layoffs. And that's the last thing we need right now. So what we're asking is, I don't know how anyone logically would ever say, let's treat a Walmart and a Target, a billion-dollar company, the same as a small mom-and-pop that's barely making it, that started off with nothing. And so that's why for us, again, we're not here debating it. We're happy.
I see Robert shaking his head over this.
Well, I would like to say we're happy that Todd Gloria did recognize. He decreased it because he recognized there's an impact. Mm-hmm. If Todd Gloria thought there wasn't an impact, he would never have decreased it. He decreased it because that he said so at the council hearing. And so what we're asking is, we're not debating this. We're asking something that they have on the books already. The city of San Diego right now has, in their living wage ordinance, which we supported, an exemption for small business, 12 employees or less. The city of Richmond just did minimum wage increase, and they exempt the small business, 10 employees or less. Mm-hmm. So this is happening in cities in California.
So would you, if they were to exempt businesses of 10 or 12 or less, would that
we'd support
you
it?
To, you would then
we would support it.
The measure. Okay.
Interesting. And I did want to respond real quickly. Like, we don't want to compare a mom-and-pop shop to a Walmart or a Target or anybody else like that. And that's why I brought up the case, the example of Lunardi's, who is a small mom-and-pop shop in the city of San Jose. And again, they've absorbed it. They have moved forward, and they are doing fine. And in fact, additional data in terms of why I believe that that Mark is saying that he supports this is when you take a look, it actually really does stimulate local economies. San Jose's unemployment decreased by 2%. So, you know, again, when the Restaurant Association and other, you know, in the chamber come out and say that this is going to cause doom and gloom, as they did when they created a report on what would happen in San Jose, the opposite happened. Unemployment decreased. 9,000 brand new businesses registered with the city 1 year later. Downtown businesses grew by 3%, and an additional 4,000 jobs were added in the leisure and hospitality industry, which was the hardest hit or most impacted by a minimum wage increase. So again, folks do not pick up and leave. They actually stick around, and the dollar stretches further in that economy, which again is great. It has a stimulative effect and adds more jobs to our local economy.
Yeah. You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Mark, I'd like to ask you all, well, both of you also, both of you support the living wage that San Diego has. Out in East County, places like El Cajon have the highest poverty rate in San Diego County, as well as actually quite a high unemployment rate. What do you think about the idea of a living wage or a minimum wage or something in some of the East County communities, or for that matter, other communities around San Diego? I mean, do you think we'll see any ripple effect if San Diego does this? Is there going to be any push to do the same thing? And do you think there should be in any of the other cities?
So from our side, representing 2,400 businesses throughout the state, we would like to see something from the state of California, statewide, ideally, because we want everyone to be on an equal playing field. Mm-hmm. I do think other cities would follow, City of San Diego. Mostly Democratic-run councils will do it. Republican councils probably would shy away from it. The city of El Cajon, specifically, one thing they could do is, from the onset, is lower the sales tax. They could also, and I've been very vocal about this in the past, they could also contract their public safety with the sheriff's department, which saved them $6 million a year. You deputize all the police officers so no officer ever loses his job or her job. They all actually get a pay increase. And that $6 million they save a year, put it back into the city for infrastructure, for potholes, for job training, to attract more businesses in the city of El Cajon. I do think that for someone to stimulate the economy, you have to make it attractive to do business in there. The city of El Cajon is not an attractive place to do business in, and we do business all throughout California. The city of Santee, on the other hand, great place to do business in. City of San Diego, somewhat. City of Chula Vista, pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more they embrace these businesses, small businesses specifically, the more you could lift up everybody, because lifting up people out of poverty is not as simple as increasing wages. It's a multifaceted approach. Because if you increase wages and then you increase rents, inflation happens. Yeah. So, and I also want to be clear that our association, myself, we've supported President Obama's plan from the get-go. I support Governor Brown's plan of minimum wage. We agree with the premise 100% that we're all in this together, that we are stronger when everyone has the opportunity for a better life. And we want to see something happen, but a balanced approach. That's what we're asking. And that's what they could achieve if they give us a small business exemption for 12 employees or less.
Okay, thank you for that. Robert, what are your thoughts about whether a minimum wage or a living wage is something that should be looked at by any other of the incorporated cities in San Diego County?
Again, I believe that it's something that should, and I believe that it will eventually happen. I think that San Diego, when this passes, will be leading the way, and I think it'll actually be something that stimulates the economy make other cities more competitive with one another. And you can simply take a look at, you know, at San Francisco, then San Jose. Now you have Richmond and Berkeley and a number of other cities up there in the Northern Bay area who are actually following suit because they've seen that this is actually great. And again, I saw a report this morning that's from the IMF, who said that increasing the national minimum wage would be great. Like, a minimum wage increase is actually a great tool mm-hmm. for turning around the economy and being a tide that lifts all boats. Again, saw that today.
You've done some research on the national minimum wage proposals. Do you have that information? Do you have some details you can share on that?
I could tell you President Obama, one thing that they also talked about recently, he was quoted in saying that he supports, of course, increase the minimum wage, but also he takes into consideration total compensation. He thinks that tipped employees, and this was a big thing with restaurant employees, their association, what they're saying is, well, our average employee makes $30 an hour because they get paid this much minimum wage, but their tips add up to so much. And so when you look at industries, you can't treat everybody the same. You can't treat a McDonald's like a Donovan Steakhouse. You can't treat a Walmart like a small mom and pops. And you should, when you pass a law, you don't use a hatchet, you use a scalpel, because you want to make the best for everybody, not just for a few. And I was wondering if CPI, if you guys would, I mean, what you guys thought on a small business exemption, is something you guys would support or something that you guys are opposed to?
So a great question. I think that when we've taken a look at the 12 and fewer, I think that we've taken, so there is another counter proposal that's running, and people were collecting signatures, and we were identifying this as the fake minimum wage proposal. So it's not the one by Council President Todd Gloria, but the fake one. And it would essentially exempt 93% of businesses. And when you take a look at what the 12 and fewer is at, yeah. Like 12 and fewer is actually a majority of our businesses would be out. And I want to say it was close around the 80 to 90% figure of businesses who would actually be exempted, given a city report that came out. So in terms of like businesses and the number of employees they had. So if we're going to do that, then what's the point of passing a minimum wage for that actually has teeth? If we're really serious about trying to transform our economy, then, and we exempt a bunch of small businesses, the majority of businesses, then how do we actually begin to turn this around?
And I could tell you that I believe that proposition that they were doing, or signature gathering, I think that was 25 or less employees. It wasn't 12. Right. And the city of San Diego, Because we're asking.
So we would have to
there.
Really. Have you done any studies about what percentage of the businesses in San Diego are actually 12 or less, or for that matter, 10 or less? I think is the
there is a city report that's out there that cites actually how many are 12 or less. And I can't quote the percentage off the top of my head, but it was a lion's share of businesses were actually small.
Hopefully we'll get that.
So it exempt a ton of businesses here.
Is there any level? I mean, if it was 5 employees or 6 employees, is there any level at which you might?
From our standpoint, we want to make sure that there are zero exemptions. We want to keep this as clean as possible, and that we want to make sure that, again, we're not having special carve-outs for anybody. It gets really messy, and we begin to lose the actual intention of what we're trying to do here. And I know that Mark brought up, you know, a small business exemption or a tipped credit. And again, want to just highlight the fact that, you know, a tipped credit is really not like the way for us to go in instances like this. I know people have made claims of $20 to $30 an hour, yet we have never seen any data that's been presented.
When we take
a look at the Employment Development Department, we have seen actual wages that have included tips of putting the median income at around $8.95 an hour. So we see, like Ruth Chris Steakhouse, yes, you're going to be doing well, but then you also have people who are working in the IHOP at a graveyard shift on a Tuesday night, and you're not guaranteed to even get any customers, let alone that they're going to leave a tip.
The city of Richmond just did a small business exemption. The city of Richmond found a way to do it. So anyone to say, well, we want to clean, what does that mean? City of Richmond did it. So if someone doesn't give a small business exemption, they're basically saying a mom and pop is the same as a Walmart. And we are 100% saying, and we're here to compromise. We're not here to debate it. I mean, we're not opposing it. We're saying we're 90% there.
I'd like to ask Jayden if you have any additional questions for our guests today.
Yes, I had a question about the exemption. If you were to exempt small businesses, they could go, both of you, do you feel like workers will be distributed between the larger corporations rather than the small business because of the wage increase that they would get from moving jobs?
Sure. Now, I could tell you, I don't think that would happen because for a small business owner, our employees are a part of our extended family. That's not a soundbite. That's not rhetoric. It's reality. We know who they are. We know who their kids are. They have earned sick leave. And that's why we like earned sick leave. Because a healthy workforce is a good workforce, and healthy makes sure no one else gets sick. So the reason why people work at small businesses is because they care about the owner, they care about the purpose and the scope of what it is. It's different than someone that works at Walmart. We are invested, and small business owners pay more than minimum wage if they could afford to pay more. So the ones that aren't going to be paying more than minimum wage are the ones that truly, truly cannot afford to, that work 7 days a week, 15 hours a day just to make ends meet. And anyone that says, let's do this to lift people out of poverty, I would ask even people on the council, have they ever owned a business? Have they ever met payroll? I mean, you guys own a studio. It's expensive.
Yes.
Imagine if I came to you and said, well, Miriam, you have to pay people this much. Mm-hmm. How can you run a studio? And so that's the whole thing. It's a balance. You can't compare this news station to for example, NBC, because they're a giant. So you're a mom and pop. They're a Walmart. Same thing with us. We're just like you.
Okay.
And the other ones are like Walmart.
And I was going to say, if I could, I'd like to just point out, too, real quickly, that for family-owned businesses, there are exemptions for actual family members. McDonald's franchises, you know, you have franchisees, you have 12 or fewer employees at these places, and that's going to try to keep some folks out. That would actually exempt people from not being able to pay, having to pay. And the question is, can somebody really survive on $9 an hour here in San Diego? And here's just real quickly, the top 5 jobs actually hiring the most people between now and 2020, and I'd just like to really read off what these jobs are. We have retail salespeople, 19,250 new jobs, your median wage, $11.01. You have cashiers, 19,240, median wage, $9.55. You have waiters and waitresses, 19,210 people, that's $8.97 an hour. You have servers, fast food prep, 13,390 new jobs, median income, $9.24. And it goes on, and you can see like where the economy is going. If we're really trying to be serious about turning this around, and then we need to try to do something that's actually going to put money in these people's pockets. And again, when low-wage folks get additional money in their pockets, they turn around and they spend it. It stretches the dollar in the local economy, and people actually go and they begin to spend it on bare necessities, again, like food, like at grocery stores, like the ones that Mr. Arable represents.
Jayden, looks like you have another question to ask. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on a national scale minimum wage increase. So with each economy being different in, you know, states or cities, etc., do you feel that all of the cities you know, states, et cetera, should raise eventually to a higher wage for workers? Or do you feel some should stay and others should rise up?
I can answer for CPI. CPI would say, of course, raise everybody, right?
No, not really.
You would not? Well, the whole country? You wouldn't say raise federal minimum wage?
So, I guess, in answer to your question, I mean, should we raise the federal minimum wage? Yes, I believe so. But if we are talking about trying to look at every state-by-state analysis, I think that we need to be very intentional, and we need to really do a lot of research around that. I think that similar to the way that we put out the Making Ends Meet report, we took a look at what does it really cost to live here in San Diego to make ends meet. And again, that's why we put together that no-frills budget that literally does not include, like, even money for a cell phone or internet or anything else like that. This is a strictly bare-bones budget. And we came out to $13.09 an hour is what was needed to make sure that nobody was living on public or private assistance, right?
So are you saying that a federal minimum wage increase shouldn't just be a flat minimum where it's the same everywhere in Mississippi as it is in New York City? Or are you saying that it should have some nuances to it where it would perhaps be different in states that have a very low cost of living versus one that has a very high cost of living?
I think that the federal minimum wage is, again, this is our floor. This is, like, again, our basic. So, again, it's taking into account places like Topeka, Kansas, or places in the South. I think you're simply setting a bare floor, a minimum floor for everybody in order to, you know, and what is needed to actually be able to live a quality life at an entry-level position. However, I think that there are other states who do have a higher cost of living. For instance, if you go to the Northeast, it's a higher cost of living than, say, down in the South. And I think that, you know, in answer to the question, I think that it's definitely up to the states to look into things. But I think that we definitely should have a real conversation. Otherwise, we continue to see this widening inequality that's really undermining all of our efforts and undermining the economy as a whole. And that's why I also believe here in San Diego, when we take a look at something, local cities are now beginning to join in the movement. And that's what you're beginning to see across the country. And the reason is because we see this widening inequality taking place, and we're not doing right by the actual hardworking people who actually stimulate and keep the economy going. And so, yes, I think that it's really about taking a look at local-level data, being very intentional and understanding tools to really try to turn around the situation of poverty. Is the minimum wage a silver bullet? By no means, but it's one of the best tools that we have out there, as highlighted by research by Aaron Dubay and a number of other great reputable economists. So it's one of many tools that we have in turning things around, and that's why we really need to have it here in San Diego. And that's also why we want to make sure we don't have, you know, exemptions for anybody, because as soon as we begin to have exemptions for people, then they're living on $10 an hour, $9 an hour, and that's just impossible to do here in San Diego.
Mark, what are your thoughts about the federal role in raising minimum wage or setting a minimum wage?
Well, I agree that the federal minimum wage should always be the base, and it should make sure that, no question about it, wages should go up. No question. No question about it. People should not work full-time, live in poverty. 100%. I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a balanced approach. If you treat a mom and pop that's barely making it like a Walmart, you will put the mom and pop out of business. The CEO of Walmart is a billionaire, or makes billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. CEO of a small pizza place, or a small taco shop, or a small dry cleaners, or a small gas station, they're barely making it. They're barely making it. They're working 80 hours a week. They're not making CEO salaries on Wall Street and from stocks and stuff. So anyone to not see the distinction between a Walmart and a small business needs to go look at logic. And the reason why is, so we agree with increasing the wages and balanced approach, and that's why small businesses, yeah, they're the backbone of the country, and they do so many jobs, but you could take 50 small businesses and they won't have as many employees as one Walmart. So look at the volume as well.
Yeah, and of course, when we talk about the economy lifting people out of poverty, as I believe you've both noted, minimum wage is one component, and there's many other components we don't even have time to go into here today, but another whole conversation would be about how do we create high-paying jobs, high-wage jobs, so we're not having to worry about, you know,
education, yeah,
about everybody who's at the bottom of the tier.
If the minimum wage were to increase and not exempting small businesses, there have been studies that show that there will be layoffs on a national level. Of course, it's a little harder for local. But do you feel that it will eventually come around for these people that are unemployed? Do you feel like there just will be more money in the economy?
No. It's a very good point. Thank you for the question. Similar to national studies, locally it's the same. If There's a lot of small businesses out there that are barely making it. And if government does something that doesn't exempt them, they will potentially put them out of business and there will be layoffs in the small business. Big business, like Walmart again, I keep saying it, will do really well. They'll still make it. Small business will be almost tarnished if they don't have flexibility. And that's the whole point. It is a balanced approach. I've told Todd, I've told the other side, we're not fighting this. We're 90% there. Let's just look at everything logically. Don't make it about a campaign. Make it about facts. And I hope these people that are talking have actually owned a small business, that actually met payroll.
Okay. Robert, what are your thoughts on that?
And I guess I'll since Mark asked for facts, I'll come with a few facts here. I appreciate the question here, Jaden. But again, when you take a look at unemployment, you know, actual real, getting beyond the theory and actually looking what happened in cities where they actually did have this increase. Did unemployment go up? No, it actually went down in San Jose. It's gone down 1.8% since they've implemented it. New jobs were added. So 4,000 brand new jobs were added in the leisure and hospitality industry. Again, the industry that was hardest hit by the increase. Downtown businesses grew by 3%. The average numbers of hours worked remained constant. And you take a look at then San Francisco, you see like we have 10 years of data and, you know, they increased their minimum wage by 26%. It pumped an additional $1.2 billion into the economy over the course of that decade, even over through the midst of the recession. And you saw that with private employment, it increased by 5.6% in San Francisco, who increased their minimum wage, where it fell by 4.4% in the cities who didn't increase the minimum wage. So these are actual facts. This is what happens when the rubber hits the road. And I, with all due respect to Mark, I mean, it's when you're with the Restaurant Association and the Chamber of Commerce, these are the same groups who have cited doom and gloom only to be proven wrong when the rubber hits the road and actual empirical evidence is actually cited.
Okay. I would like to also ask each of you, for listeners out there who want to learn more about this, where can they go to get more information about the arguments for or against the minimum wage? I'm going to give each of you a last word here, and if you can include any contact information. And Robert, since we let you lead it off and get the first word in, we'll let Mark get the last word here and close it out. But Robert, if you could start by telling us your thoughts.
Absolutely. So if for folks who'd like to learn a little bit more, you can visit our website at www.raiseupsandiego.org. There's a lot of information on there. And you can be up to date in terms of like any new kind of campaigns or rallies or anything else that will be coming up, in addition to understanding what the latest is in terms of our council policy. Again, for us, this is really about making sure that nobody who works full-time should be living in poverty, and also making sure that anybody who finds themselves sick or has a sick loved one does not need to risk losing a day's pay to stay home and take care of themselves or a sick loved one. And I think that when we take a look at, again, the original $13.09 proposal, while we were adamantly in support of that, the $11.50 is still a step in the right direction, and we think that that's really going to add additional money into people's pockets. And we know that this is going to impact the lives of tens of thousands of low-wage workers. It's going to inject additional money into our local economy. We have real-life examples beyond theoretical frameworks, but actual real empirical evidence of what's happened in two other cities, where it's actually stimulated and boosted and turned around that economy. And even fierce opponents of this of minimum wage increases have turned around and said that they are in favor. So why wouldn't we want that for the city of San Diego? It's good for business, it's good for residents, and it's great for the region. And that's why we are in support of Council President Todd Gloria's minimum wage proposal.
Very good. Thank you for letting us know that. Mark, what are your closing thoughts?
Sure,
today?
Sure, absolutely. Now, the reason why Todd Gloria went from $13.09 to $11.50 was because he recognized there's an impact on small business and business at large. If he didn't, he would never have decreased. He would have kept that $13.09. So he recognized it, the author of this thing. I do also hope that the city of San Diego will put this on for a ballot. I hope they don't do an ordinance. Because one thing they did discuss yesterday was, should they do an ordinance and pass it themselves or do a ballot initiative? Something this large of this magnitude, you need a voter mandate. The citizens of San Diego should vote on this. And if they say yes, then it's the will of the people. If they say no, the will of the people. Let the citizens decide, not council members, not public officials that were voted in. A voter mandate, just like they did the sales tax in the city of San Diego, is the strongest thing you can have, especially it's the only American way to do so. I also would say there's a small business coalition that's coming together, but we don't have a website to say, well, go on this, read our propaganda of why this is such a good thing to do. Because we're not debating it. We're not trying to fight it. We're trying to compromise. We're trying to have a solution for everybody, for business, for working class families, for every San Diegan. And the way we do it, as we've said, we're okay with $11.50. But just like in the living wage ordinance, there's an exemption for 12 or less employees, exempt small business of 12 or less employees, just like the city of Richmond just did in the state of California. Because you can't compare a small mom and pop to a Walmart or a Target. And whoever can't see the difference between them. I hope they go to look at it in a different perspective. And we're not here to fight. We're here to find a good solution for everybody.
Right. Well, I very much appreciate the willingness of both of you to come in and have a good, honest discussion on this extremely important issue, which, however it turns out, is certainly going to impact many, many people across our region. So thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Leon Thompson with the heartwarming story of a man whose life was saved in Alpine thanks to the efforts of bystanders. The Alpine Fire Department held a ceremony on June 17th to honor residents who saved the life of Scott Holland. Holland was working at a construction project on Kevin Court in Alpine on October 9th in 2013 when he suddenly collapsed from a severe cardiac event. Michelle DiTommaso, the homeowner, sprang into action and initiated CPR while another construction worker dialed 911. DiTommaso continued CPR for approximately 9 minutes before she was relieved by Isaiah Andrews, an audio installer who was also working at the site of the new home under construction. DiTommaso stayed by the victim's side while giving CPR instructions to Andrews. Soon after, the Alpine Fire Department paramedics, firefighters, and the Viejas Fire Department ambulance arrived, and crews were able to defibrillate Holland, transporting him to the hospital with a heartbeat. Holland experienced a full recovery and was in attendance at the ceremony, along with the firefighters and ambulance crew who helped save his life. Dr. Brad Schwartz, medical director for AMR and the Regional Cooperative Care Program, spoke of the benefits of bystander CPR prior to arrival of advanced life support. Without the quick and sustained actions of Ms. DiTommaso and Mr. Andrews, Scott Holland would have had very low chance of survival. Without the quick and sustained actions of Mrs. DiTommaso and Mr. Andrews, Scott Holland would have had very low chance of survival. The early actions of these local heroes, followed up by Alpine Fire Department's advanced life support and rapid transport to the hospital, made the difference in this life or death situation. Alpine Fire Chief Bill Pascal and Alpine Fire Board President Patrick Price handed awards for outstanding community service to everyone involved, including the Heartland Fire Dispatcher that assisted with emergency CPR instructions over the phone. Maureen O'Connor from Project Heartbeat, a nonprofit that provides automatic defibrillators for public facilities, was also at the event. Alpine Fire Department provides free hands-on CPR training each year at their annual Sidewalk CPR event in early June. For more information on learning CPR, log on to www.sandiegoprojectheartbeat.com. That is sdprojectheartbeat.com.
An overflow crowd turned out for Wednesday night's La Mesa Planning Commission meeting on the controversial Park Station project, a multi-use development proposed at Baltimore Drive and University Avenue. The developer has scaled down original plans from an 18-story high-rise to 11 stories, but that's still more than double the height limit for the city's historic downtown village area and vicinity. Our reporter, Janice Russell, was at that meeting. Testimony ran on for over 4 hours, with 23 speakers opposed and 26 in favor. Most of those praising the project came from outside La Mesa, while those against it were predominantly La Mesa residents. the evening ended with a shocker when Lenny Guccione, business manager for the American Legion, the project's co-applicant, testified that the project was just too big for the neighborhood. Then he abruptly announced withdrawal of the American Legion's support and walked out of the hearing. It is unclear whether the project can continue without the American Legion's support, since their project is part of the property involved. The announcement stunned planners and project backers. A recess was swiftly called, after which the developer's spokesman, Sherman Harmer, with Urban Housing Partners, admitted that American Legion's withdrawal came as a total shock. The Planning Commission voted 7-0 to close the public hearing and end public input on the project. After internal discussion and staff input, a new meeting was scheduled for Wednesday, July 16th at 7 p.m. The developer, Kitzman, earlier had pulled out all the stops to woo community support, even offering free taco dinners to anyone who would testify in favor. City Manager Dave Witt said of that tactic, "I can say I have never seen this done before, and it seems out of place." Out of place is exactly how many La Mesa residents view this project. Concerned citizens said it would be overscale for the community character, obstruct views, and cause potential parking and traffic problems. But supporters contend the transit-friendly development is needed, bringing housing, shopping, and jobs to La Mesa, along with boosting sales and property tax revenues for the city by $1 million or more. Planners must weigh whether the environmental impact report adequately addresses impacts and if it meets standards set by the California Environmental Quality Act. A staff presentation showed that the latest proposal eliminates a planned park. The new proposal would include retail, office, and residential space. None of the units would be affordable housing, staff said. There are significant and unavoidable negative impacts, including air quality and aesthetics. Some cannot be mitigated. Sherm Harmer from Urban Housing Partners said the developer aims to create a walkable and inviting environment. The developer hopes to start construction in 2 years. Others speaking on behalf of the developer said there has been extensive community outreach, which led to the scaled-down height and efforts to address crime concerns with improved lighting, cameras, and secure underground parking. Street improvements to mitigate traffic would also be made at Baltimore University. Jacob Schwartz continued the formal presentation in favor, stating that the new plan proposes much more open space and much greater public gathering areas. He claimed that the 11-story mid-rise would still be in keeping with a, quote, small-town feel, unquote, that would be consistent with community character. Chairman Levy asked how this project would be inviting to the public. Schwartz told him, "There are walking pathways. It creates curiosity." Joseph Kitzman stated that his grandfather envisioned this as a legacy project. "We're in this for the long haul," he maintained. Frank Kitzman noted that the family has lived, worked, and developed in the city of La Mesa for over 100 years. Mary England, president of the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce, spoke as an individual, calling the project a great opportunity for the city to help generate revenue and create a community gathering place. The first to speak in opposition was La Mesa resident Nathan Cunningham, who recently bought a house in La Mesa and he likes the small-town feel. He fears that if the project is built, traffic will increase and that one parking space per unit is simply inadequate if new residents decide to purchase a second car. The plan is not realistic, he concluded. Realtor Laura Lothian, also a La Mesa resident, suggested the project could lower property values in the downtown village area. Mary Ernest, who lives in La Mesa as well, said she supports development, but that the project should not exceed the current 46-foot height limit. Whether planners will recommend approval, modification, or rejection of plans for the towering structure proposed near La Mesa's century-old downtown village remains to be seen. But ultimately, La Mesa City Council will have the final say on the future of the Park Station project. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
30 years ago, the rate of preventable trauma deaths in San Diego County was 21%. Today, the figure is less than 1%. The county attributes this dramatic change to the county trauma system, a successful public-private partnership between the County of San Diego and six designated trauma centers. The San Diego County trauma system has saved thousands of lives and continues to prevent deaths from traumatic injury, said County Supervisor Ron Roberts, who presented a proclamation to the trauma system this week. The trauma system has proven to be a vital resource for our community. The San Diego County Trauma System is one of the first coordinated multi-center trauma systems established in the United States and remains a nationally recognized model. In fact, a person who sustains a life-threatening injury in San Diego County is twice more likely to survive than if the injury happened in practically any other part of the United States. A traumatic injury refers to a physical injury of sudden onset and severity, which require immediate medical interventions to save life and limb. Traumatic injuries could result from motor vehicle crashes, sports injuries, falls, natural disasters, and many other physical injuries. The local trauma system serves all of San Diego County and receives many patients from Imperial County hospitals. It is made up of the following six trauma centers: Palomar Medical Center, Scripps Memorial Hospital, La Jolla, Scripps Mercy Hospital, Hillcrest, Sharp Memorial Hospital, Rady's Children's Hospital, and UC San Diego Medical Center. There is currently no trauma center in East County, however. In the past 30 years, about 250,000 injured patients have received vital trauma care in the region. The County Health and Human Services Agency Emergency Medical Services triages patients to one of the six centers based on a number of factors, including geographic proximity. Whether arriving by ambulance, helicopter, or on foot, critically injured people are rapidly assessed and the coordination of trauma care begins. A trauma victim's chance of survival depends on immediate response, said Nick Maccioni, Director of Health and Human Services. The San Diego County Trauma System has been a great success because of the dedication and many years of hard work from the surgeons, nurses, and staffs of the trauma centers, as well as the pre-hospital and base hospital personnel and staff of EMS. Despite these successes, however, the lack of a trauma center in East County means patients in rural areas must still be transported long distances for treatment. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Leon Thompson.
And this is Miriam Raftery, and we're guest hosting this week's Destination East County.
This weekend is the official beginning of summer, and Destination East County has a lineup of great outdoor activities such as summer concerts, movies, and hikes, as well as events with trains, raptors, and blues bands.
The 16th annual Julian Blues Bash happens this Saturday, June 21st, at Mangini Winery in Julian, with a great lineup of blues bands, of course. Music lovers can get tickets at the gate for this all-day event.
A Midsummer Night's Dream Beyond Your Wildest art show and summer party will be held at Fusion Glass Company Gallery and Studio in La Mesa on Saturday, June 21st at 7 p.m. In keeping with their Midsummer Night's Dream theme, guests are encouraged to dust off their fairy wings, take out their wands, and come dressed in fairy costumes to make the evening more fun. This event is slated to be an enchanted evening filled with unique art and jewelry, wine, beer, food, and Fusion Glass Company booty bags. All of the featured artists are local San Diego County artists.
The San Diego Astronomers Association and the park staff are hosting a star party on Friday, June 20th, beginning at sunset at the Sycamore Canyon Gooden Preserve in Poway. This is a chance for spectators to view the galaxy with the same technology used by professionals. The group meets at the Highway 67 staging area, accessed by the southbound lanes only.
Engineer for an Hour at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo is a rare opportunity for a train enthusiast 18 years and older to take controls of a powerful diesel railroad locomotive and power it down the track using air brake, throttle, and horn at the 40-acre Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. The only remaining dates for the Engineer for an Hour event are Saturday and Sunday, June 28th and 29th. There will be opportunity to share running time with family and friends. Online reservations are required, and it is first come, first served. The museum's historic Golden State vintage passenger trains will also make a 12-mile, one-hour scenic journey to Tunnel No. 4 and back.
The City of Santee's summer concert series begins on Thursday, June 19th, with an expanded lineup featuring performances by 11 well-established regional bands. The free concerts are held Thursdays at 6:30 p.m., except for the week of the July 4th holiday, all at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. The live bands performing this summer include rock, country, blues, tribute bands for the Beatles and Elvis, and more. New this year, each concert will have a theme that is integrated into the entire experience. Food offered for sale at each concert will be different each time, depending on the theme.
A nature hike with a ranger is presented in the Potrero County Park on Saturday, June 21st at 2 p.m. Hikers can enjoy this leisurely hike through oak trees and learn about the gold-spotted oak borer beetle, as well as the native plants and animals that call this place home.
The movie The Avengers will be featured at Movies in the Park at Viejas Outlet Centers in Alpine on Friday, June 20th at 8 p.m. Movies are enjoyed at the Outlet Center under the stars in a park setting. Children 12 and under are free to attend, but they must be accompanied by an adult.
The movie Walking with Dinosaurs will be shown outdoors at Sweetwater Regional Park in Bonita on June 21st in the evening. There is a small fee to park.
The Sky Hunters program will be given at the William Heiss County Park just south of Julian on Highway 79 on Saturday, June 21st at 6 p.m. Guests will be able to view raptors, hawks, owls, falcons, and eagles up close and learn about laws protecting these sky hunters, as well as what to do if an injured raptor is found. Future dates for this program are also on Saturday, July 12th and August 9th, both at 6 p.m.
A new Art in the Park exhibit at the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitors Center Gallery opens on Saturday, June 21st and continues through July 18th with solo oil painting artist Julia San Ramon. If you are heading to the park, check out their continuous lineup of free hikes and walks throughout the park. One of those walks taking place Saturday night, June 21st from 7:15 to 8:45 p.m. is Twilight Walk, led by an MTRP guide to explore the nocturnal world at the park. Hikers can meet at the Bushy Hill parking lot across from the Kumeyaay campground entrance at Two Father Junipero Serra Trail in San Carlos.
This Friday night's dinner and a concert series at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon features the Danielle Tucker Band playing country music. Many of the restaurants downtown also offer dinner specials to coincide with the free concerts on Friday nights.
Ronald McDonald will be appearing at the McDonald's on Hamishaw Boulevard in Spring Valley for a time of magic, games, and prizes for everyone. The event takes place on Saturday, June 21st at 1 p.m.
At the El Cajon Library, there are two musical performances this weekend. On Saturday, at 2 p.m., the Acoustic Showcase series presents Mojave Soul from the San Diego Bluegrass Society. The next day, the Santee Community Chorus is presenting a concert of musical numbers, old and new, for all ages in the community room of the El Cajon Library on Sunday, June 22nd at 3 p.m.
Now for a preview of some fun upcoming events happening in East County. Twisted Manzanita Ales in Santee is celebrating its fourth anniversary on Saturday, June 28th from 4 until 7 p.m. at Santee Town Center Community Park East. The anniversary party will have a culinary spread provided by local San Diego restaurants in addition to local spirits.
Tour Nature is a leisurely hike amid the scenic landscapes and historic grounds of Old Mission Dam, starting at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground in Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday, June 28th from 8:30 in the morning until 10 a.m. Hikers can get some fun facts as the MTRP Naturalist Guide unwraps secrets of nature during the hike. Hikers meet at the campground entry station.
Outdoor movies at Santee Lakes will begin on June 27th this summer, and a new movie will be shown every other Friday night at 8 p.m. The movie Frozen will be shown on June 27th. The Movies by the Lake series includes games and activities for children before the movie starting at 7 p.m. And, of course, picnicking with lots of grass, picnic tables, and playgrounds nearby.
At Wrightsfield Preserve in Alpine, a flashlight series event titled In Awe of the Stars will be held on Saturday, July 5th from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring a chair or blanket and a flashlight and enjoy an evening of stargazing with guide Trevor Gardner, a local Eagle Scout. The group will walk into Wright's Field to take advantage of the darkness of the preserve for stargazing. The group meets promptly at 8 p.m. in order to hike together. You can park and meet at Joan McQueen Middle School on Tavern Road in Alpine. This event is organized by the Backcountry Land Trust.
Lindo Lake Park and Lakeside will be showing outdoor movies at dusk on the following dates. July 11th, Monsters University, and August 23rd, The Lego Movie.
And we've saved the best for last. On Saturday, July 5th, KNSJ invites you to our community radio station's first anniversary party from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum, no-host bar, two stages with comedy acts, and musical entertainment. For tickets and reservations, you can visit www.knsj.org. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and by a community enhancement grant from San Diego County.
See you around, East County.
Less cigarette smoking, soda drinking, and physical fighting, but more time at computers and other tech devices. That's the snapshot from the new CDC National Youth Risk Behavior Survey. The government goal of reducing teen smoking nationally to less than 16% has been met. But CDC Director Tom Frieden notes that it's a fragile victory at 15.7%, along with the rise in popularity of e-cigarettes, smoking pens, and electronic hookahs.
And no kids should be exposed to advertising that glorifies the use of nicotine or be able to easily buy e-cigarettes because their sales have not been restricted.
The Maryland rate of smoking in the survey is even better at 12%. Frieden's other concerns, condom use has become less common. Most teens are still not eating a balanced diet. And while most young people are spending fewer hours watching television, they've replaced most of that time with time spent before a computer beyond school reasons. Stephanie Zaza is the director of the Division of Adolescent and School Health at the CDC. She says while they have a lot of great data, they do not have the reasons why kids do the things that they do. She finds it alarming that 41% of teen drivers admit to texting or emailing while driving and urges parents to step in to stop any behavior that takes a teen's attention away from the road.
Parents play an active role in keeping their teen driver safe by close monitoring, frequent discussions, parent-teen driving agreements, and acting as a role model of good driving habits.
The CDC reports that car crashes are the single biggest killer of teens and young adults, causing 23% of deaths among 10 to 24-year-olds. For Public News Service, I'm Deborah Smith.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.